2023 recruiting targets in the Pac-12 are making some decisions to the benefit of some and the detriment of others. Let's go.
Locked On Pac-12, your daily podcast on the Pac-12 Conference. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Pac-12. I'm your host, Spencer McLaughlin, D1 play-by-play broadcaster. Thanks for making this your first listen or your first view of the day. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your number one source to stay up to date with the Conference of Champions. Like, comment, subscribe wherever you're listening to or watching the show. I appreciate the hundreds of you out there who have already done so. By the way, I can't tell entirely, but if I look a little bit crisper, a little bit more in focus, it's because I got a new laptop. The old one had run its course. So if it looks a little better, just let me know, because I'm just curious. It looks better on my screen, but I don't know if that's the case on yours as well. But we've got some recruiting news to get to. So let's start with USC. And one question that I've been asking here on the show and talked about with Carter Baines earlier this week is, with USC, you know, in theory being back, at least in a recruiting sense or from a recruiting sense, because, you know, the on-field product, we haven't seen it yet, but we expect that it's going to be good. But we know that USC is going to recruit at a high level. Two of the verbal commits they've got in the class of 2023 are top 10 players nationally. It's his name on 24/7 Sports, Zachariah Branch. Maybe it's Zach. I don't know, but he's a five-star wide receiver. And then Malachi Nelson, who's the number two quarterback only to Arch Manning, who, as I'm recording this, just recently announced his commitment to Texas, which could have some Pac-12 ramifications, but that's for a different episode. But so I've been asking that question because it's naturally going to be harder for other schools to recruit out of the state of California, but just West Coast kids in general, because USC is going to go after as many as they can in theory, or at least the high end ones. And so getting them, you know, for a school like Oregon or Utah or Washington that, you know, maybe want to dip their toe into California, for UCLA, it certainly gets much tougher as well right there in Los Angeles. How much is it going to impact their recruiting success? Because now you have a USC program that is going to recruit at a higher level under Lincoln Riley than the previous administration. And this is bearing some fruit in the form of Amos Talalele. He is an offensive and defensive lineman. He's 6'5", 330 pounds. He's from Santa Clara High School in California, not far away from where I went to college, actually, at Santa Clara. And he is a Bay Area guy. He was committed to Cal, but now he's flipped his commitment to USC. And I can't imagine that this is the last time we will ever see that happen, where a guy is planning to go to one school, maybe USC comes in late and then ultimately makes that offer, or at the very least, you know, you're down to two schools in the Pac-12, two or three, and you end up choosing the Trojans because you believe in what Lincoln Riley is building there. The other guy that they got committed on the defensive line, 6'5", 265 pounds, Grant Buckey is his name, from Liberty High School in Bakersfield, California. He was offered by every school in the Pac-12. I think that's pretty noteworthy, because you think about Lincoln Riley and the sorts of recruits he expects to bring in, you'd imagine most of the high-end ones will come on the offensive side of the ball. Now, these are, in theory, both defensive players potentially, but I think that's a really a solid place for USC to feel from a recruiting standpoint, that every school in the Pac-12 was after Grant Buckey, and he's landing on the Trojans. But Talalele is fascinating. So he committed to Cal to play defensive line. He's committing to USC as an offensive lineman. I don't know either. He played both sides in high school. He's capable of playing both sides. I think if you look at USC's roster, there are needs on both sides of the trenches. You're talking about recruiting classes going forward. Defensive line coming into this year is probably going to be a little bit more of a weakness than the offensive line, but the offensive line also lacks some depth. Like, if they have one or two injuries up front and miss guys for a few games here or there, the players that they have filling in behind are not people that fans and writers and media people in the Trojans community feel particularly confident about at this point in time. So I think that's a solid get. He's certainly, I mean, that's a big dude. 6'5", 330 pounds. That is a really, really big dude. But I don't think I've ever seen that before where a guy commits to one school and he's going to play on the defensive line. That's what Justin Wilcox had in mind over there. He, of course, is a defensive-minded head coach, so former defensive coordinator with the Huskies up at Washington. And then he's going to go to USC as an offensive lineman for an offensive head coach. So maybe that's playing into it. Maybe it's just a chance. I don't know. But I thought that that was worthy of note. Couple of three-star guys there. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, their overall composite rating and perhaps star rating goes up their senior years. That's something that could happen when you're talking about these recruits, is they're going into their senior years, right? Because it's class of 2023. So right now they might be three stars with this sort of composite rate. But if they have a really good senior season and maybe they, you know, add a few pounds, or maybe some other guys need to slim down or whatever, right? They show an extra trait and the scouting departments look at them and go, boy, I think that guy's actually going to rate higher. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these guys ends up moving in the four-star direction, because Bucky, I'm going to double check here that he's a three-star, but he, you know, 6'5", 265, he's three-star right now, but he's kind of like bordering on that four-star range. I bet you he's four by the time he actually gets to USC next year. But UCLA was going after him, and this is, again, one of those instances where the Bruins were looking at this guy, and he ends up going to USC, whereas a couple of years ago, it might have been easier to get him to go to UCLA when Clay Helton was there, but with Lincoln Riley, it's a little bit different. Speaking of recruiting and Washington, their latest commitments, one slightly more important than the other, but both still solid-looking players. One of them has the greatest name. I mean, you could put this at any position on the football field, but as long as it's on the football field, this is a great name. Three-star cornerback Diesel Gordon. That's so good. That is top tier. That is the Top Gun Maverick of names right there, because that movie is really awesome. He is a cornerback right now, committed to Washington over Utah and ASU, where his other notable Power 5 offers. The report on him is he might actually end up playing safety, and that's a little bit surprising, but also not as much. He's a corner right now in high school, but I think his body type projects a little bit more as a safety as opposed to what Washington has had at corner over the years. Now, maybe Kalen DeBoer and his staff are going in a different direction in that sense. I don't know why you would need to, because Washington has a very strong reputation as being sort of DBU in college football. They just had a bunch of great players in the secondary coming out, but they've had a couple of good safeties as well. Buda Baker is, of course, in the NFL. Shaq Thompson was a safety, now plays linebacker. He's kind of that in between, but I'm pretty sure he's full-time linebacker now in the NFL. But it's their sixth commitment in the class of 2023 for the Huskies, which is not a bad place to be. That's kind of middle of the conference right now in terms of the number of commitments that they have. But recruiting for Washington, which I'm going to get to later when we do the evaluation today of the hire of Kalen DeBoer for the Huskies to round out the show. Recruiting is one area that I think Husky fans are looking at pretty closely, more so than other schools like a Washington State, for instance. You're going to look at maybe some transfers that you bring in more, or really just like what the product on the field is on Saturdays, more so at a program like Washington State than Washington, where you might focus on recruiting a little bit more. Not that you're going to ignore what happens on Saturdays, but you don't come into a job like Washington State or Oregon State or Colorado or even Cal and expect a coach to, you know, start recruiting at a really high level. It's just a really tough thing to do at those programs. But Washington's now got six commitments verbally in the class of 2023, and they are players I'll tell you about after I remind you of this episode brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball. Go Mariners. Bet Online is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to esports and scores and more. It's the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. Bet Online, where the game starts. So the first recruiting cycle for Washington head coach, new Washington head coach, Kalen DeBoer. I always wonder when a coach gets hired, when is he no longer the new head coach? Is it once he's done a game? Is it once he's done a season? Is it once he's been on the recruiting trail for a few months? Because like DeBoer, Washington has now been there for about half a calendar year. Or landing at Oregon, got hired, I think that was sometime in December. It, like, I don't know when you that this is just a small semantical thing, but I don't know when a coach is no longer new. But their commitments are as follows. You got Diesel Gordon. That's just an outstanding name. I'll be surprised if that guy doesn't become a stud in college football, because that's sort of thing that if Washington's playing a nationally televised game and he's, you know, part of it, Diesel Gordon is going to get some attention because he's got a badass name. The other verbal commitment they got in the class of 2023 is three-star edge Jacob Lane, who committed to the Huskies over Utah and Arizona. Gordon was over Utah and ASU. So the Huskies here getting a couple of defensive commitments over Utah, which has had one of the best defenses in the Pac-12 for the last basically year in and year out. Like that's probably the premier defensive brand in the conference. When you factor in the amount of success that the school is having as well, because, you know, Cal's had really good defenses, but they don't win very much. Utah wins a lot, and they usually win because they have a really good defense. And of course, offensively, they put it together in 2021 for a conference championship. But the other guys in the class, you got four-star wide receiver Rashid Williams, three-star running back Tybo Rogers. Again, another great name, Tybo. Maybe Shigama Turbo, but you know, Tybo, that's unique, and I dig it. Three-star wide receiver Keith Reynolds and three-star linebacker Devin Bryant. But I think Lane is the most significant of these guys because DeBoer has a challenge in front of him that is not going to be an easy one to overcome, because there has been an ongoing trend, and it has been more than a small handful of guys when you're talking about the top high school football prospects in the state of Washington going out of the state. Lane went to Puyallup High School in the state of Washington. Is he a huge big-time recruit? No. But I think if you're Kalen DeBoer and you're the Husky fans watching or listening to this, you have to hope that that starts to get the ball rolling in some way for keeping your in-state talent home for the most part, because Jaden Wayne is not going to Washington. And last year, Davey Uli left the state of Washington. And there are a bevy of other names that the Huskies are going after that they're interested in. Josh Connerly's leaving the state as well. Like there's more names than that who are going elsewhere. And that's not a place you want to be as a program. Now, for some states, it's not as important, right? Like a Colorado or maybe an Oregon or a Utah. Like if you're not getting all of the top in-state talent, it's not as big a deal because there aren't that many players there. But Washington, I think Washington and Arizona are two states. Arizona maybe a little bit more so. But Washington, I see as being a state that is increasingly churning out some pretty high-level talent in the high school football ranks. And so recruiting your own backyard is, in theory, the easiest thing to do, right? It doesn't cost you as much money, doesn't cost you as much time, but you also, you know, if your program is doing well, have some institutional buy-in in the minds of those kids, some of whom maybe grew up going to games at Husky Stadium in Seattle, which is a beautiful place to go and watch a football game. So I think that's something that Washington fans should be looking out for on the recruiting trails. How well can they maintain and keep their in-state talent? Because that's something that has fallen off, right? The on-field performance dipped dramatically in 2021, but the recruiting has not gone, I think, the way that the Husky fans expected to. Because at their peak, if you look at them with Chris Peterson, they were recruiting top 20 caliber high school classes year in and year out. And that's, I think, a reasonable goal for them to be at from a recruiting standpoint, is being top 20 nationally. It's not as if they lack any sort of tradition of winning as a football program in the Pac-12 conference. And so I think that if they're able to do a better job of keeping their in-state talent, and I think there's just increasingly more and more coming out of the state of Washington, then that will be a sign that things are going well for Kalen DeBoer and his staff on the recruiting trail. Speaking of Kalen DeBoer, let's move to the evaluation of his hire. I've done all the coaching evals based on past performances and guys who have already coached games in the conference. But of course, there are three new coaches this year. Jake Dicker is kind of in the middle. The next segment of coach talk that I'll do here is expectations for new coaches, and I do put Dickert in that group, though he's already coached games. But that's something that we're looking at going into this year, which is why you should like and subscribe wherever you're listening to or watching the show, so you can get all the content that I'm churning out for you here, getting you ready for the college football season, which, gosh, I can't wait. I miss college football. I think we all miss college football, and I can't wait for it to be back. And DeBoer, I think, has a lot of things going for him. And I think that, you know, overall, when you're looking just at the hire, right? He obviously hasn't coached a game with Washington, so we can't grade his on-field performance, can't grade things like player development like I was looking at with other coaches, or you can't really look at assistant hires that much at this point in time, right? That all will come later once he actually, you know, gets to coach his team on Saturdays. And I think the good news for him is that their early schedule is pretty favorable. Kent State, Portland State, and then Michigan State, and then Stanford. Those four games are at home, so could be worse. If you're a new head coach, it could be a lot worse. You could be Dan Lanning going at Georgia for your first game as a head coach. Like that could be a lot worse. So I think that's a good opportunity for Washington to get some momentum there. But overall, grading the hire, I'd give it a C+, bordering on a B-, like kind of like right there. I think it's like a 79 point something, and it depends on whether or not I'm going to round up today. I'm going to go with no. Now, again, I still have that graded as above average because I'm not handing out B's and A's the way that high school and college professors and teachers do nowadays. So I still say it's a pretty solid hire, but I think there are a couple question marks there that are reasonable to raise with regards to how successful he could potentially be in this new job he's got as the head coach at Washington. I'll tell you what those are after I tell you this episode brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. They're a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto part needs. They've got all the parts you could ever need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet if that's what you're looking for. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck, right? Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Overall, I give the hire of Kalen DeBoer a C+, and it's not that I don't think he can win games. He certainly could, but I'm looking at the resume that he has and where he's coming from, and, you know, also the situation that he's coming into at Washington, which I'll get to more here in just a sec. But winning at Fresno State or any non-Power 5 conference or at any non-Power 5 school, that was a mouthful, is always a good thing to see, right? You have to know how he's an offensive coach. You have to know how to show up on Saturdays, have a good game plan, execute it, have your guys ready. Like, anywhere you win, that's the reason that you get attention as a coach. The reason that I'm hesitant to put this or to say that this is just like an unbelievable home run hire is he was only at Fresno State really for one full season. He was there in 2020. They went 3-3, so not really a full season. Then they come out in 2021. And I think part of the reason that Washington was willing to go in this direction after just one good season, whereas, you know, other coaches, I mean, at least he's been a head coach, right? I mean, Dan Lanning hasn't even been a head coach before, and that's easily the biggest question mark there is, do you know how to be a head coach? Kalen DeBoer has that going for him. But what he's got me questioning is, it was one season, and it was a very good season. It also included a win against a Pac-12 school in UCLA, and very nearly another win against Oregon at Autzen Stadium. And of course, that game against UCLA was down in Los Angeles. So I think that's probably another part of the appeal from the Washington Athletics perspective, is like, he knows clear. I mean, he beat a Pac-12 school and very nearly beat another one with inferior talent. And so it's not a hop, skip, and a jump to say, well, if he's able to get better talent and have better talent on the roster, which Washington certainly does compared to Fresno State, then he's going to be able to compete at that level. Like, I totally see that. And I agree with, you know, having that sort of mindset. But just doing it for one year, a lot of things can go right in a year versus sustaining, you know, a level of success or having a track record over a longer period of time. is a much tougher thing to do. Now, the recruiting expectations I've got for him are at a B minus. So when he was at Fresno State, the 2 years that he was the head coach, their recruiting class ranking improved each year. And that means that he knows the sort of player he's looking for, has an idea of how to sell his vision to recruits. If you're able to come into a place that, you know, is in the Mountain West Conference, and obviously you're not recruiting in like a top 30, 40 level, but if you come in and you make the recruiting better, that is a very good sign. And at Washington, it should be a lot easier to pull in recruits than it was in Fresno State, because he's got a decent amount of talent in his backyard, as I was just talking about earlier in the show. But the other thing is that in Fresno State, he had a bunch of talent in his backyard, but he's like the sixth school in the state that people would consider, because you've got Cal and Stanford in the Bay Area, UCLA and USC. Like, I'm trying to think if there's another California school out there. Maybe I'm missing one, but that's a lot harder. Even when you have more kids going up against those schools, and you have, you know, other schools, other programs coming into your state to try to battle you for those recruits as well, it's a really tough thing to do when you're in the Mountain West. So I think that is certainly going to be an advantage for him on the recruiting trail. And I don't expect it in year one. I never expect anything in year one of a turnaround, right? Anything you get that's, you know, good news in the first year of a new head coach is just sort of an added bonus, because this sort of stuff takes time. I think at Washington, it'll take more time maybe than some people think, certainly than some odds makers think. They have Washington at like 11-1 to win the Pac-12 this year. I think that's way too high. I think Washington State would have a better chance, though neither has a great one. But I'm just saying, I think Washington State's going to be better than Washington again this year. But the early returns so far in the recruiting trail, that they haven't been, aside from the guy I mentioned earlier, Jacob Lane, keeping their top talent in state. If they can do better in that department, then I think you're going to start to see the program start to feel, you know, like it's got a little bit more momentum on the recruiting trail. Coaching pedigree, again, I give him a C+. I'd say it's, you know, slightly above average in what I'll call 1.5 seasons at Fresno State. He's 13-6 as the head coach. And, you know, he's been a head coach before that, as well as at the NAIA level back in the day. He was very successful at the NAIA level back in the mid-2000s. He was the offensive coordinator at Indiana, so it's not like he hasn't been at the Power 5 level before. And he translated a successful run over there with his, you know, potential starting quarterback, Michael Penix, back at Indiana. And so now they've, you know, come over to Washington together. But I think the biggest area of concern is he has to undergo a bit of a rebuild here, and that's a tough thing to do. And you have to be able to recruit a high level, which he certainly could. He recruited pretty well at Fresno State, but I think the status of the program or the biggest challenge that he's got, I think that area of these coaching grades that I'm giving out in terms of evaluating the hires, is it a C-, slightly below average. Washington's off a 4-8 season. It was a messy and a choppy 4-8 season. Now, they had success in 2020, and then that ended the way that it did. It could be worse. I mean, you could be, you know, I think I would have given a D or probably even an F in terms of programs or status of the program coming in for a new head coach to Arizona when Jed Fish took over, when they'd lost 12 straight games as a program. I think that's about as low as you can go. So it certainly could be worse. And Washington, I think, is an easier place to rebuild than Arizona. So he's got a couple things going for him there. Like, it's not the worst situation, but I think that the biggest challenge that he's going to have is how can you rebuild the roster to make it, you know, full of guys who are going to be NFL caliber players. Now, you have one in Jackson Kirkland, but he's of course not going to be around forever. And then he's got the quarterback battle to figure out, because he brings in Penix as a transfer, but you've got Sam Heward on the roster, who's the highest rated quarterback commit in the history of the Washington Huskies. So there are a number of challenges that he has, and for a guy who's not supremely experienced at the Power 5 level, I wonder how he's going to be able to make that adjustment. I think that in terms of raising his team's profile, which is the final category I'm giving to these coaching evaluations. Again, I'll go slightly above average at a C plus, which is what I give his overall. Is he capable of, you know, and this is certainly what Washington is thinking when they hire a new football coach because they've been there before. Is he capable of getting them back to the college football playoff? I think it's too soon to say, right? We need to see a full recruiting cycle. We need to see, you know, what they look like on the field this year. I mean, if they come out this year and they get over 500, then my evaluation of him would go through the roof because I don't think Washington's going to be able to get there this year. But if they do and they just go 7-5, I'd go, boy, that's an impressive year one turnaround. And then I think Washington could maybe translate that into some recruiting success as well. But I put this slightly above average in terms of raising team's profile, because the other thing you have to consider, and sometimes sports are weird like this. Who was the last head coach from the Mountain West Conference that Washington hired? Yeah, you already know. It's Chris Peterson. So that one went pretty well, and maybe I don't know if that played a factor or if they were really looking at him, right? It's a very quick rise for him to go from offensive coordinator at Indiana to a half season at Fresno State, a good full season that includes a Pac-12 win, to now you're a Power 5 head coach. That's a lot of those are a lot of jumps, and I think it's fair to question whether or not he's going to do that. I would lean towards yes, but I don't think it's going to be as quick as a turnaround as, say, a USC with Lincoln Riley, where it's, you know, plug and play, bring in a bunch of great transfers and expect immediate success, to where Lincoln has USC's expectations at, you know, 9-10 wins this year in year one. I don't think that's the case for Washington. So I think DeBoer's got a little bit of a tougher situation, but it could certainly be a lot harder in the Pac-12. It's not like he's turning around Cal or Arizona, or, you know, Arizona State is way down right now, or trying to turn around Colorado. It's certainly a better situation to be at, but I think he has to, you know, I think he has some room to establish himself as someone who's, you know, fully credible at this level, because that's what everybody's got to prove. And he just hasn't been there that long. So I like the hire. I just have a little bit of reservation about it, but we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next time, and have a wonderful rest of your day.